I'm Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports, and we will start with baseball today. I'm going to give you the scores. All three of our local teams lost yesterday. The Cubs defeated the Red Sox 7-1 up at Fenway. The Brewers 7, the Yankees 6. That's out of Milwaukee. And at Citi Field, the Cardinals defeated the Mets by a score 4-2. All the other games yesterday were late, except one afternoon game I can give you, Kansas City 8 and Detroit nothing. All the other games, as I said, were late and did not make the current. We're going to start with this story. Tristan Casas first felt the discomfort after a swing against Ben Lively during last Wednesday's shutout of the Cleveland Guardians at Fenway Park. The Red Sox first baseman thought it was an abdominal issue, but after trying to tough it out for a few days, it eventually came clear this wasn't an injury he could play through. Now, Casas is likely to miss several months with what the club described as a rib fracture, though after a series of examinations, he likened it to an anatomy lesson. Casas explained his injury is actually a bit more complex than a simple bone break. No ribs were fractured. It's not a bone thing. It's more of a cartilage. If he'd been involved in any collision, that would merit some pain in his midsection. When he told them no, actually, let me go back and finish that. Casas said he was told by the doctors that his injury is much more common in football and hockey players. And when he was asked if he'd been involved in any collisions that would merit some pain in his midsection, when he told them no, the doctors chalked it up to his being so big and rotating so fast that so many times when he swings that his body couldn't hold up. I pretty much created a car crash within my body, and it was a matter of time before this happened, Casas said. He said it was something similar to like a pitcher needing Tommy John, just an inevitable thing that was going to happen sooner or later. The good news is that this injury isn't any better or worse than if he'd fractured a bone or pulled a muscle, as all would have had a similar timetable of several months. The bad news is there isn't anything he can do but wait for the cartilage to heal, and there isn't much clarity over how long that could take. They said anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 weeks to 9 weeks. They don't know. It's just dependent on how my body is feeling, Casas said. Right now, I'm still in pain to breathe. My lungs are still hitting my midsection. I'm still getting to like 75% capacity without pain. So the first step is to feel good breathing before I can move to cardio, and then I'll move into more anaerobic exercises and progress as I go there. Even still, Casas said he's optimistic he'll be back in time to play a meaningful portion of the season, and that once the injury heals, it shouldn't take long to get back into game shape. It's not something he said I'm going to need to manage. He says once it mends correctly, I'll be able to hit the ground running and keep going, Casas said. There won't even need to be a rehabilitation process, just a strengthening process of the abdominal area to continue my swing progression. As for whether there's concern he could suffer an injury like this again, much like some pitchers need Tommy John surgery more than once, Casas said his understanding is that once the cartilage heals, his whole abdominal area should be more durable, making a reoccurrence less likely down the road. Now over to the Mets. A few hours before his long-awaited Mets debut, J.D. Martinez said he just wants to fit into the lineup and contribute. It's unfair, manager Carlos Mendoza added, to put too much pressure on the veteran designated hitter. Still, an air of excitement hung over Citi Field on Friday with the six-time All-Star finally in the Mets lineup, hitting fifth behind Pete Alonso for the first time. I made it, Martinez, standing in front of his new locker, said with a laugh before the Mets series opener against the St. Louis Cardinals. The Mets called up Martinez, 36, on Monday after signing him to a one-year, $12 million contract in late March. Martinez, one of numerous big-name Scott Boras clients to endure a prolonged free agency in the offseason, had hoped to debut sooner, but lower back tightness set him back during his extended spring training in Port St. Lucie. He watched from afar as the Mets slumped to an 0-5 start, rebounded with five consecutive series victories, and finished off a 3-3 road trip this week against two of the West Coast's toughest teams in the Dodgers and the Giants. "I want to obviously be a part of it," Martinez said Friday. "If they're struggling, I want to struggle with them. If they're going good, I want to do good with them. That's part of being a team. Unfortunately, signing so late, I didn't really get to know the guys and hang out with them, but I'm here now, and I'm hoping to make an impact." Mets ace Kodai Senga is set to throw a live bullpen session Monday, which would mark the pitcher's first time facing hitters since suffering a right shoulder strain during spring training. Senga, who is on the 60-day injured list, threw a bullpen on Thursday. "He's feeling good today," Mendoza said. And one more note, Tyler McGill, also recovering from a shoulder strain, is set to pitch two innings for High A Brooklyn on Saturday, according to Mendoza. McGill won Senga's vacated spot in the rotation out of spring training, but suffered his injury during his season debut on March 31st. Second baseman Ozzie Albies was activated Friday by the Braves ahead of a weekend series against the Guardians, matching the teams with the two best records in the major leagues. Albies returned from the 10-day injured list on schedule after going down with a fractured right big toe. He was hit on his foot by a curveball from Houston rookie Spencer Armaghetti in the Braves' victory April 15th. Albies remained in the game, not realizing he was injured until he took off his shoe. Luis Guillorme and David Fletcher shared playing time at second base while Albies was out. The Braves went 7-1 during that time to improve to 17-6, the top mark in baseball. Still, the team was eager for the return of Albies, a 27-year-old three-time All-Star who was hitting .317 with two home runs and 14 RBIs. Fletcher was outrighted to AAA Gwinnett. And we're going to do the NHL playoffs now. Toronto is the dateline. Jake DeBrus did not have the season he wanted, especially not when he has his first crack of unrestricted free agency this summer. But there's nothing like a good playoff run to make things all better. DeBrus scored 19 goals in the regular season. Not bad, but not what was expected after he notched 27 last season while missing a month with a broken leg. At the moment, however, that disappointment of the regular season seems a distant memory. Through three games in the first-round series against the Toronto Maple Leafs, DeBrus has 3 goals and 2 assists to help the Bees to a 2-1 series lead. He's been noticeable beyond the points. He's got 13 hits in the series, including 7 in Boston's 4-2 win here on Wednesday. Coach Jim Montgomery said that when DeBrus habits and details are locked in, his talent can come to the forefront. "I saw him go through 4 bodies Wednesday night. That's when I know his competitive nature is where it needs to be," said Montgomery. "And he's engaged. When he's engaged with his talent, he comes up with pucks. He's at the net front on the second goal. That's not an easy goal to corral, get it and bury it, but competitive nature got him there and his skill set took over." DeBrusk has had his moments in the playoffs, especially against the Leafs. In his first playoff series as a rookie in 2018, he scored 6 goals, including the Game 7 game winner. He wasn't as productive in the 2019 series, with his 1 goal coming in a do-or-die Game 6 in Toronto, but he did take one for the team when Nazem Kadri cross-checked him in the head and got suspended for the rest of the series. Now he's got it rolling again, and the intensity of the playoffs has seemingly gotten the best of him. "I think it's brought it to another level," said DeBrus after the Scotiabank Arena practice in preparation for Saturday's game at 4, that'll be at 8 p.m. "Obviously, you try to get better and better at this time of year. It gets only harder from this point on. But I think that it's exciting. It's a clean slate, nothing, nothing, and you're playing for your life. I think it's just a matter of trying to get better and better. There's still lots of room to improve and grow, especially 5-on-5. But at the same time, we've got to be ready for the response. They don't want to go down 3-1. It's going to be the best game of the series. It can be a clean slate for him personally as well, especially toward the end of the year. I was just wanting to get to this, to be honest with you, said the Brusque, whose 3 goals have all come on the power play. I don't know if I took it as a clean slate that things would go well. It obviously could go the other way because it's not easy and it's only going to get harder. You've got to stay focused and determined and understand what the goal is at hand. Yeah, I use it as an opportunity. I think we all do. Every player wants to be in big moments, wants to have success and to continue that. The Brusque has been a notoriously streaky scorer in his time in the NHL, and he appears to be on one now. Now we're going to go to the NBA playoffs. A lot of things in sports can be true at once, and right now there are a lot of things true about what is turning into a rock fight between the Knicks and 76ers, starting right here. The Knicks have been hit now mostly by Draymond Embiid, not just low, where Embiid got Mitchell Robinson's legs, and not just in a place slightly higher, where Embiid hit Isaiah Hartenstein with his knee. The Knicks all got hit Thursday night when they had the chance to bury the Sixers and did not. That is one truth as we look ahead to Game 4 in Philly on Sunday afternoon. Another and an obvious one is that Joe Embiid, if he did have the kind of priors Draymond Green does, what would have gotten flagrant second had he gotten good and ejected for pulling Robinson down the way he did? The Knicks and their fans have a right to yell their heads off about dirty play and how the refs blew it. But so, too, did the refs blow it at the end of Game 2. No fouls, including flagrant ones, in Game 2. Lots of harm. But perhaps the most lasting truth of what we've seen in this series so far is that on Thursday night, when the Knicks really could have finished off the Sixers, they let a guy with a bad leg use his good one to kick them from one end of Broad Street to the other in the second half of Game 3, a half that included the 76ers rolling the Knicks for 43 points in the third quarter. Tom Thibodeau was remarkably subdued on Thursday night, despite doing a tremendous job with his messaging about Embiid and the free-throw disparity his team encountered on the road, a lament as old in the playoffs as the Jersey Turnpike. When the subject of flagrant fouls and Embiid was raised, Thibodeau dryly asked, which one? But then Thibodeau had told the truth of his own when he simply said, we've got to do better. To his team's credit, it did not simply start looking ahead to Game 4 after Embiid and the Sixers seemed to make every shot they took in the third quarter. Jalen Brunson was back to doing Brunson things on his way to a 39-point night. Josh Hart contributed 20 more points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, continuing to play like a star. And the Knicks were still hanging around in the fourth quarter in a game the Sixers should have long since put away, getting the lead down to 8 before some bad turnovers, one of them committed by Brunson. But the story of this game in all ways was Embiid, because of what was clearly the cheapest of shots on Robinson, because Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported that Embiid has been suffering from a case of Bell's palsy, mostly because the former MVP of the league, even as he still looks as if he sometimes is walking in a swimming pool, became the only third player in history to score 50 or more against the Knicks in a playoff game. Michael Jordan was the last to do it 31 years ago. Sam Jones of the Celtics did it in 1967. Wes Embiid helped mightily by getting... Or was Embiid helped mightily by getting to shoot 21 free throws and making 19. If you saw the game, you know that he was. It doesn't change the fact that he got to 50. And just like that, everybody moved on from one of the best playoff endings in Game 2 any Knicks team can ever had, and one of the worst the Sixers have ever had, the Knicks scoring the last 8 points in the last half minute to win. And that was a Larry Johnson of an ending at the Garden with some Reggie Miller thrown in. The Knicks doing to the Sixers what Reggie had done to them once when he scored the last 8 at the Garden in even less time than the Knicks did last Monday night. One thing is for certain, when this thing does return to New York and in the Garden next week, NBA will hear it from the crowd the way Reggie did in the old days when he became public enemy number one with the Knicks fans, when it was the Knicks and Pacers who had the kind of bad blood we are now seeing from these two teams this week. And we're going to go now to the Connecticut Sun. Quite a long story here. The Connecticut Sun have spent the last 7 seasons as one of the most consistent teams in the WNBA, reaching at least the second round of the playoffs every year. But the franchise always finds itself on the outside looking in when it comes to the ultimate goal of a WNBA championship. The 2023 champion Las Vegas Aces and runner-up New York Liberty beat the Sun a combined 9 times in 11 meetings last year, including a 3-1 series win for the Liberty in the semifinals. The Sun finished 27-13 in their first season under coach Stephanie White, and they are poised to compete at the top of the league again with little turnover entering 2024. The most exciting thing is just building off the foundation that we did last year, White said. We were at our basic level of execution on both ends of the floor. Everything was new. Everything was an adjustment. So continuing to challenge our group to take another step in a positive direction and be disruptive in our own way as a staff, we're sitting here talking about all these things we can do with our personnel that are outside of the box and a little bit innovative and continuing to just build off of that first layer. Connecticut enters training camp with a full 18-player roster that will need to pare down to 12 by the time the team opens the season against the Indiana Fever on May 14th. As Caitlin Clark mania sweeps the nation, the Sun will have a chance to prove out one of the gate whether the league's veteran contenders still have an edge over the flashy class of young superstars making their WNBA debuts this season. Now, here are some key dates for the Sun training camp. On April 28th, first day of training camp, May 9th, preseason game versus New York Liberty, 7 p.m. at the Mohegan Sun Arena. May 13th, final roster cuts due May 14th, and the season opener versus Indiana Fever, 7 p.m. at Mohegan Sun Arena. Now, we're going to go over to UConn basketball. The UConn men are one step closer to a three-peat. Liam McNeely, a five-star recruit in the class of 2024 and one of the best high school recruits still available, committed to the Huskies on Friday evening. The news was first reported by ESPN's NBA draft insider Jonathan Givney. It felt like a perfect fit, McNeely told Givney. Coach Hurley is a hard-nosed coach. That's the kind of coach I thrive under. The offensive system they run is perfect for my game. The culture of the team, the sets they run, they are going to help me get better on both sides of the ball. The whole coaching staff are good people. McNeely, a 6'7" from Monteverde Academy, where he recently capped off an undefeated season with a national title, is ESPN's 9th-ranked player in his class. He previously committed to Indiana over Kansas and Texas, but reopened his recruitment early last month after the Hoosiers announced head coach Mike Woodson would return for the 2024-25 season. McNeely, one of the best high school shooters in the nation, will help fill the void left by Cam Spencer and potentially Alex Caravan, who has left his option open to return after he tests NBA draft waters. The Richardson, Texas native shares the same phone call celebration as Tristan Newton, whose eligibility has expired. My main goal is to win a national championship, he told ESPN. UConn is on a roll right now. They've gone back-to-back, so there's no reason we can't contend for a three-peat. McNeely averaged 12.5 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 2.8 assists on the season with Monteverde, which finished the year 34-0 and beat fellow UConn commit Isaiah Abraham's team, Paul VI, to win the high school national championship. He finished the year 68 for 155 on three-point attempts. That's 43.9%. He was also named MVP of his team in the Jordan Brand Classic last weekend, where he scored 25 points in a losing effort to another future teammate, Ahmad Noel. McNeely is the 13th McDonald's High School All-American to choose UConn, the second under Hurley. Stephon Castle, the first since 2016, was named Big East Freshman of the Year and picked for the NCAA All-Tournament team this year before announcing his decision to enter the NBA draft as a one-and-done. He is the second addition to UConn's roster since the Huskies won back-to-back national titles earlier this month, joining Michigan transfer Terrace Reed Jr., a big man who will team up with Samson Johnson in the front court with the departure of projected lottery pick Donovan Klingon. UConn hosted St. Mary's transfer Aiden Mahaney this week and is set to host Dayton transfer Kobe Bray, the best three-point shooter in the nation last season, this weekend. And a little more on Bray. The UConn men's basketball program will have another visitor on campus this weekend. Kobe Bray, the nation's top three-point shooter at Dayton last season, will begin his visit to stores on Friday and stay until Sunday. The news was first reportedly college basketball insider Adam Zagoria, he reported it, who said Bray will also visit Duke from Tuesday to Thursday next week. The 6'6 guard from Washington Heights, New York, cut his list down to five schools on Monday. All of the options blue bloods, with Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky also in the mix. On Three Sports, Jamie Shaw reported Friday that UConn and Duke would be Bray's only visits. Playing 29.1 minutes per game for Dayton last season, his fourth year with the Flyers, Bray averaged 11.1 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 1.2 assists per game. He led the nation in three-point percentage shooting at impressive 49.8% from beyond the arc on 6.1 attempts per game. No other player in Division I shot over 46.5%. If I had to pick one of those five schools, I would think he'll go with UConn, everything else being equal, Dayton Daily News reporter David Jablonski told The Current on Tuesday. His family and friends were a big traveling party to so many of his games on the East Coast. Huge crowds at Fordham, LaSalle, they go everywhere to see Kobe play. If he can land at UConn, I'm sure a lot of people will support that. And we're going to finish with the NFL draft. The Jets, after a draft day deal, added a pass protector with the 11th overall pick. Minnesota traded pick number 11, along with the 129th and 157th, in exchange for the Jets' 10th overall pick and a sixth-rounder, the 203rd. After moving back one spot, the Jets selected Penn State tackle Olu Fashanu, which should significantly bolster the team's offensive line. It's such a unique draft class at the tackle position because, you know, we really felt there were a handful of guys who were unbelievable players, Jets general manager Joe Douglas said. With Olu, what he does in pass protection, very little pressure rates playing in one of the top conferences in the country. He's just a really high-level, high-attack pass protector. He's a big, giant body at 6'6". 305 pounds. He's a very tough, competitive human being. Some draft analysts believe the Jets could draft Washington wide receiver Rome Aduzene or Georgia tight end Brock Bowers to aid their passing attack. But the Bears selected Onuzi ninth, leading the Jets to trade back one spot with the Vikings and draft one of the nation's best tackles. If teams are building on offensive linemen from scratch, Fashanu would be it. At 6'6", 312 pounds, Fashanu has strong hands and is an explosive athlete off the line of scrimmage. And we will go over to the Giants. All of the teams who needed a quarterback on Thursday got one, except the Giants. Giants GM Joe Schoen reportedly tried one last time while the New England Patriots were on the clock at number 3 overall to trade up for North Carolina quarterback Drake May, but he wasn't able to land New York's preferred quarterback. So 6 teams left with quarterbacks in the top 12 picks of the 2024 NFL Draft, but the Giants weren't one of them. When asked if he were still looking for a quarterback at number 47 overall in the second round on Friday, or comfortable with Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, and Tommy DeVito in his quarterback room, Schoen doubled down on the incumbent. "I'm comfortable where we are," he said. His actions earlier hadn't demonstrated exactly that. However, the Giants did try to trade up number 3 to take Drake May, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported Thursday night. The Vikings and Giants made one last stitch effort, so the Patriots to try to get them off the number 3 overall pick. Schoen was not willing in his Thursday press conference to confirm what had transpired before the Patriots made the pick. "I said last week we were going to have conversations in front of us. We actually had conversations behind us. There was an opportunity for us to move off out of the pick. We had conversations. We had different plans in place, and we're ecstatic to have Malik Nabers here." Schoen wanted to keep the focus on the player he landed, not the player he failed to obtain. "We had a lot of conversations with a lot of teams," he said. "I'm not going to get into specifics. And we got a really good player at 6 that was a position that I think was a need we needed to upgrade. And I'm ecstatic to have Malik here. I'm really fired up about the kid." And I don't have much time just to read a little bit on the Patriots. It's December 2025, the two-minute warning of the one-score game. The Patriots just called a timeout. White snow falls from a black Foxborough sky. Cody and Gillette Stadium, Mr. Brightside, or Anchor, or another song that always stirs a crowd's soul in a way that you can't quite explain, but always feels blares from the loudspeaker. The sound fades out as play resumes, with the music lives on through a bellowing, sold-out crowd. Drake May trots back from the Patriots' sideline and into the huddle. He's conferred with Gerard Mayo and offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt about how to play this upcoming 3rd and 7. Elliot Wolf watches from a cozy booth up high, his remade roster pushing for a wild card spot far down below. May claps his hands, the huddle breaks, and it is go time. You can see it, almost feel it, a frigid Foxborough moment of hope and promise, a young, gutsy quarterback at the center of it all. That's all I have time to read, at least giving you the draft picks for the 3 local teams. All that's on the air today. We will start with baseball, Major League Chicago at Boston on NESN, Radio 1080 at 4 p.m. The Chicago, or the St. Louis Cardinals at the New York Mets, that's on Fox, also Radio 880 WCBS at 4 p.m. At 7 p.m., New York Yankees at Milwaukee, that's on ES, that's on Radio 97.9. And 9:30 p.m., Arizona at Seattle, that is on FS1. In basketball, Eastern Conference first-round playoff, Cleveland at Orlando, Game 4, it's on TNT, 3:30 p.m. Western Conference first-round playoff, Oklahoma City at New Orleans, Game 3, TNT, 6 p.m. Eastern Conference first-round playoff, Boston at Miami, Game 3, TNT. And at 8:30 p.m. Western Conference first-round playoff, Denver at the L.A. Lakers, Game 4 on ABC. In football, at noon, the 2024 draft rounds 4-7 from Detroit. That'll be an ABC and ESPN, also on the NFL Network. In golf, PGA Tour, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, third round, CBS. And quickly, hockey, the Carolina New York Islanders, Game 4 of their series at 2 p.m. on TBS, 5 p.m. The Florida team at Tampa Bay, Game 4, TBS at 8 p.m. Boston at Toronto, Game 4, TBS. And finally, 10:30 p.m., the Western Conference first-round playoff, Dallas at Vegas, Game 3 on TBS. That is all for the sports today. Hope you have a great weekend, everybody, and please stay safe.